everybody. Jonathan Dorr with you once again. Welcome to the weekly podcast. We got something special for you this week. I'm going to do a bigger intro in just a moment, but I'm going to introduce you to author Ron Walker from Atlanta, Georgia. I came across his audiobook earlier this month and I really loved it, and I want to make sure that at the end of this, go and check out the links wherever you're hearing this. I want you to check out the links to his audiobooks on Audible, to his books on Amazon. I want you to just check out his social media feeds. We want to really make sure we get behind what he's doing. Now, in this interview, there's a lot of richness. I hope you will really make the time to listen to it carefully. Ron's just got some real wisdom for us. We talk about life, the human condition, failure, powerlessness, effort, hard work, talent, purpose, finding what matters in life, and we talk about practical steps to really move you forward in some of these areas. So I really hope you're going to enjoy this special podcast discussion that I have with author Ron Walker. Check out the links if you're hearing this on SoundCloud. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. If you're hearing this on iTunes, would you please press subscribe so we can keep sending you great interviews from around the world. But for now, sit back, relax, enjoy this awesome interview all the way from Atlanta, Georgia with author Ron Walker. Hey everybody, welcome once again to the weekly podcast. Jonathan Dorr with you once again. I got a special treat for you this week. So much of the time you're hearing me, occasionally a special guest, but this week we've got somebody all the way from Atlanta, Georgia. Earlier this week, I was on a training ride. I was just about to get on the bike for 2 hours, and I'm always looking for great content, podcasts, audiobooks. I jump on Audible and I am led to the wonderful book by author Ron Walker. And this wonderful book is all about pressing through when things are really, really difficult. So there's some great messages in the book. I want to share those with you, but rather than just have me do it, we're going to have the author himself. So I'm really excited to welcome to the podcast author Ron Walker. Welcome aboard.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, yeah, as I said when we were talking before, I really appreciate you you staying up so late. I shared with you that I'm very much a morning person, but you like to press through the evenings. That's right?
I love the evening time. I love the peace and quiet of the night.
So if you're working through, we were talking before, and you work through till really early in the morning, what time are you starting your day on the other end?
Even though I normally go to sleep around about 4 a.m., I'm probably up around 9 or 10 in the morning still.
Wow. Okay. Okay. I know that if I do that, I can't be trusted with heavy machinery and driving vehicles. Are you a coffee drinker?
Every now and then.
Okay.
When it's necessary, I am.
Okay.
But normally, I'm normally really ready to go and take on the day. I love what I do.
Yeah.
So that gives me the energy I need normally to sustain myself.
Okay. Well, I can.
And every now and then an afternoon nap.
Well, okay. I like that. I like how you say coffee every now and then, because I have coffee every now and then too. But my every now and then is kind of usually once every hour. But it's still now and then. So listen, I want to talk with you about a few things. I think what drew me to the book when I was scanning through Audible was just the title, and the title of the book that we're going to talk about today, and really encourage all the listeners to find this work, whether you want to listen on Audible or get it on Amazon. The title of this great book is You're Too Close to Give Up Now. I love that, because the mantra that I'm working on a lot these days is just the difference between, or the relationship between, talent and hard work. I posted on Instagram yesterday that for years I've always felt that, you know, talent's a big deal. You know, if you're talented at something, you can go a very long way. But what I've been very convicted of more recently is work, and how many people give up when they're close to a breakthrough. They give up when things are almost about to happen because for complex reasons. But let's talk about what motivated you to write this book, because in the introduction you talk about what you experienced in life around the time of the global financial crisis back in 2008. And that was a really, I don't know if you'd call it rock bottom, but it was a very trying time for you, that obviously a lot of your work's come out of that experience. Take us back there. Tell us what you experienced back around that time and then how it led to the book.
Absolutely. That was a very trying time for me. I actually wrote another book before this latest one called I Almost Gave Up.
Yeah.
Because during that time, I really wanted to give up. I was married, 2 children, multiple homes, business doing wonderful, so many things. I was living that so-called American dream.
Yeah.
I thought I had everything, and then everything just fell apart. And I watched in that time, I was losing houses. So many other people had lost jobs, so they no longer had income, so they could no longer pay the rent on the homes I owned. So now we were carrying multiple mortgages.
Wow.
And then my business, at the time, I think my overhead for that business, rent alone was about $8,000 for the building we were occupying.
Wow.
We hit months where we were only making $800.
Wow.
So everything just fell apart. My wife, she really couldn't handle it. And I understood. I'm the entrepreneur. She was not necessarily cut out for it. So she made a decision to move on. So in the midst of that, I'm losing businesses. I'm losing houses. I lost my family. Then my grandmother died. And then they thought I had cancer. But later on, we realized that was really just from stress.
Wow.
So I got to a point where I wanted to give up. And just recently, I realized I had to put something out because it seems like we kind of hit hard times again in this country. We really run into some areas of distress. And I just wanted to encourage people to let them know that it gets hard for everyone. We all go through hard times. But you have to realize that you're really close to where you want to be, even though it doesn't seem like it at times. So if I would have given up then, I would have never seen the success I've seen since.
Well, take us to the core of that experience, because can you remember a rock bottom moment? Was there a particular day, conversation? Was there at some point when it got as dark as it ever got for you?
The darkest it probably ever got for me was realizing that I couldn't do for my children.
Yeah.
When they needed something and I couldn't be the superhero daddy to fly in and rescue them, I didn't have the money to do it. That was hurtful. And for some weird reason, it made more sense to me to drive out into the woods and contemplate taking my own life.
Yeah.
Than to stay here and fight it out and figure it out so that I could provide for them. And thankfully, my mother sent me a message while I was sitting in the woods, and she just said, "I love you."
Wow.
And that was enough to let me know that I had to keep going.
So explain this to us. I want to get right to the core of one of the biggest challenges I face with coaching people and talking to people is, how do we explain the fact that you found a turning point, that you found something in yourself where you could perceive the situation differently and make different choices? So many other people may tragically end their lives or turn to alcohol or any other sorts of coping mechanisms. How do you explain this to yourself? What stopped you from complete collapse?
It's difficult, but I'll tell a lot of people, I allowed love to fill the void I had.
Yeah.
A lot of people, we choose other methods, from drugs to alcohol to even work.
Yeah.
A lot of people choose different things to try to fill those voids and make up for where they feel like they're falling short. But I allowed my mother's love at the time, the little bit of love that I could see, I let that drive me. And I wanted to do more, because I know that no matter how bad it gets for me, it's worse for someone else. Hmm. There's someone else out there that's going through an even more difficult time. I had multiple houses, and there's other people that don't have one home. So I had to start looking at things from a different perspective. I believe you may have, I'm not sure if you saw my book, The Betrayal of Peter.
Yeah, I saw that on your website. Yep.
Okay. But in that, I just really talk about seeing things from different perspectives. That's something that I've used in life to kind of keep driving me. I try to see things from multiple points of view to get different vantage points. So I've realized that even though it may look bad from where I'm standing, if I start looking at it from a different perspective, oftentimes things will look a little bit different. So I can find a little bit more strength.
Where did you learn that? Like, many people wouldn't have that. Where did you learn this idea of coming at things from different perspectives?
I have absolutely no idea. I have no idea. I've studied psychology. My undergrad's in psychology. I read a lot. So sometimes when I'm just up at night, I'm reading. I love reading motivational books. I love listening to interviews. I have to draw on the energy of other people. I grew up in a poor area. I grew up around people that really didn't have a sense of vision of living dreams. We just were taught to get a job, and that's what you were going to do for the rest of your life until you retire, and maybe you get a nice house. We grew up with food stamps, living in government subsidized housing. So to dream was not something I was taught. So I had to get outside of that area and find new life in books,
so in interviews. So what I'm looking for is, I'm always searching for the for the core belief system. Like, I want people to hear you, and we need to understand what you were thinking that's different to so many other people. Because as you know very well, the majority of people won't tend to do what you did. Mm-hmm. So when you reflect on that, how do you explain your choices to yourself? What, because you can explain what you did. You can say, well, I had a different perspective. But what was the energy source? What allowed you to make those different choices? I mean, it's the question of desire. Like, people sometimes just can't get that internal push forward. Can you teach that to people? Is it something you're born with? Like, why not just settle for mediocrity and failure?
You know, there was one point in my life where I believed everyone could be an entrepreneur. Everyone could build a business and leave the job world, the 9-to-5. But I actually got to a point in my life where I wasn't sure of that. I teach a lot of people, I consult with businesses, and I've come to learn that some people are just not cut out for that particular battle.
Yeah.
But I do believe that people can still own businesses, we can still do different things, but you have to be able to, I always tell people, get a mentor.
Yeah.
Get someone you can look up to, someone that can guide you. And the other side of me is in ministry, so I'll tell people, hey, if you don't believe in something, believe in the God I serve. I believe. I'm a believer in Jesus Christ. So that's just who I am. But I tell people, you have to have faith in something.
Yeah.
And it has to be something that's bigger than you. And I just learned to attach myself to something that was bigger than me.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because you talk about some of the challenges even facing the United States at the moment, just internally. There's a fair bit of hopelessness again, isn't there? There's definitely a sense, you know, in the developed world, of, I think, the gods that we were all chasing, you know, this idea that if we made enough money, if we got enough stuff, then we'd be happy. I call this my Harley moment, because a little bit like yourself, I grew up with a lot of financial stress. I worked really hard, built a lot of stuff, and there was one day, and I was sitting in this beautiful house we live in, and I'd bought a brand new Harley Davidson. I was sitting on this Harley, and I looked out the garage door, and I said to myself, I really remember this moment. I said, and now what? I just suddenly had this moment of, I'd got everything I ever wanted, and I needed, you're so right here. Like, talk a little bit about this human desire for more, for something more. Like, you're doing it through contribution. You're writing books and impacting the world. Because there'll be so many people listening to this who are just, even today on Facebook, somebody's hit me up about purpose and they can't find one. What do you think's deep in the human heart? What do people want?
Purpose is so important. Like I said, you have to be able to attach yourself to something greater than you. I had that same moment, oddly, sitting in my garage, looking at a Mercedes. Yeah. I bought myself a Mercedes for one birthday. Then I bought myself a Honda CBR for another birthday.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm sitting on my bike, I'm looking at my motorcycle in my garage, you know, overlooking my home, and it didn't do it for me.
Yeah.
It still wasn't enough. I could buy as many cars as I wanted to, as many motorcycles, as many houses, but it would never give me the same satisfaction as I get from looking in someone's eyes when they tell me that I was so close to giving up, but I read your book.
Yeah.
But I heard your message. I heard your sermon. I heard you speak. And I was so close. And that's the thing that keeps me pushing. Every day I wake up, whenever things don't go right, you know, business doesn't go well every day. That's some true. People think when you get in business, you become an entrepreneur, everything just easy sailing. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
There's good days and bad days and worse days. But what keeps me pushing is to realize that someone's watching. Someone needs me. Someone needs that encouragement that I have to offer. So I keep on pushing because I don't know who's watching. And I don't know when that person's going to need to hear whatever I have to say.
Yeah. So is that contribution? Is that, do we describe that as, at this point in your life, do you find that sense of meaning through contribution? Is it that simple?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I really, when I leave this earth, I don't want to just disappear. I don't want to just fade away and have left no imprint. You know, when I leave, I want someone to say, he helped me while he was here. He did something while he was here. I may not, you know, die and be Martin Luther King Jr. or, you know, great basketball player like Michael Jordan or great boxer like one of, you know, Mike Tyson or Michael Jordan, one of the great Mikes, whoever. I just want to be the best version of me that I can be. So when I leave, I can make the impact that I was supposed to make.
So take us through how you began this turnaround. So you're out in this forest, you're under enormous pressure, relationships are under pressure, mm-hmm. business is under pressure, you get this text from your mother. Take us through the next few steps. How did you begin to turn things around? What did you do?
I have to run and see if I can find a copy of my book.
It's like, what did I do?
And I almost gave up. I kind of outlined my steps through an acronym of refocus.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I had to refocus. I had to stop looking at the bad parts of my life and start looking at the positives.
Yeah.
I'm that guy that always tells people, no matter how bad it gets, there's still some good in it.
Yeah.
So what I had to do at that time, I had to stop focusing on the fact that, you know, my house was in foreclosure. And I turned my eyes and looked at the fact that I still have a roof over my head. I stopped focusing on my wife, you know, had left. And I started focusing on the fact that even though she had left, she still loved me.
Yeah.
We still had two wonderful children that loved daddy. You know, no matter how bad things got, there was still a silver lining somewhere. And I started focusing on that silver lining. And I realized that whatever I focused on grew. You know, a lot of people talk about the law of attraction, or you can hear Tony Robbins and they'll say, whatever you focus on, that's what you'll see. And I think he does an exercise where he'll tell people to look around the room and find something red.
Yep.
And he says, close your eyes. Tell me something blue that you saw.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're going to see what you focus on.
Yeah.
So I had to refocus. I had to start looking at things from a different perspective and just observing the fact that my life wasn't as bad as I was making it.
So is it that simple? Like, I'm fascinated by this because I, you know, this is, I've found this hard, not in my own life. It's whether you're naturally optimistic or pessimistic, it's hard sometimes to go, I'm going to choose to look at this differently. I don't know if you agree with this, but it's actually work, isn't it? You actually have to in your book, you talk about, you know, faith is hope in things not yet seen. Like, you know, from Hebrews, you've actually got to choose to look at something that isn't there yet. Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely. I mean, if it was easy, everyone would just do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's work. You have to train yourself, reprogram yourself. It has to become a daily exercise.
Yeah.
It's not something that just comes naturally a lot of times for some reason. I don't know why. It seems like people have a natural inclination to sway towards the negative.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's so easy for us to just be negative or see the worst parts of life. So it takes effort, it takes work, it takes programming for us to start really becoming more positive people.
Yeah.
And I really won't say I'm an optimist. I'm a realist.
Yeah.
You know, there are some people that are super positive and chipper all the time. I'm not that guy. I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
But I try to stay more positive than negative, but I'm at the I'm really just realistic. Well, I realize that the life I've created, it can be good, bad. Yeah. It's whatever I decide it is.
Well, I think in terms of evolutionary psychology, I think we actually have a predisposition to negativity, because pessimism tended to have a pretty good evolutionary advantage. If you go back to caveman times, if you were genuinely pessimistic about your crops, pessimistic about hunting, pessimistic about the weather, you tended to do more and take more action out of a sense of fear. And so I say to people that what's happened is we have this kind of evolutionary predisposition to negativity, which served us maybe 100,000, 200,000 years ago. But now our environments are usually not so threatened. So we have this abundance we've never had. So we have to choose this positivity. But I do say to people, there's really good studies to say you don't want an optimistic airline pilot. They actually say that the best airline pilot is a pessimist, because they're just like, they expect something to go wrong, so they're always working on it. I want to ask you something. I want to ask you about a couple of things that have come up already in this discussion. I want to talk about failure and powerlessness. Now, particularly for men, powerlessness is a very strong experience. I often tell the story of when my little boy was rushed away in an ambulance and he was very unwell. He's fine now, but it was traumatic for everybody at the time. And as a father and as a man, you feel absolutely powerless, because no amount of money or physical strength or anything is going to impact that. I was very struck by that experience. So back when you went through that rock bottom season of life, how did you deal with things like powerlessness and failure? And you've talked about refocusing and perspective, but what do you have to say to people who are experiencing failure, or who might be listening to this and feel that they're powerless to change their circumstance? What's your take on failure and powerlessness?
It's funny, because we're supposed to be talking about one book, but I keep referring to another.
Yeah.
You're Too Close to Give Up Now is a wonderful book. I love it, but I really feel like it's a follow-up to I Almost Gave Up.
Yeah.
Because I Almost Gave Up, the full title is How I Overcame Depression and Inadequacy.
Yeah.
So I know what you're saying is so true, especially as a man. When you get to that point where you feel powerless, you feel like you can't control the outcome or change what's happening, a child is sick and you can't do anything about it, it's one of those feelings where I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
Yeah.
I would not wish it on my worst enemy. How do we overcome it? For everybody is different. For me, it took a few simple steps that helped me to, refocus, get myself back on track. But I really can't speak to everyone. I'm not a clinical psychologist.
Yeah.
And I'll tell people, even in the book, I say, hey, this is a starter. This is step one. Refocus. This is step one. For some people, you may need a therapist.
Yeah.
You may need to seek professional help.
Yeah.
You may need someone with a master's or a doctorate. It takes work. If I can't stress it enough, it takes work to overcome this.
Yeah.
It takes work to overcome this feeling. Some people can wake up and refocus and say, hey, I'm not going to let this affect my life. I feel powerless, but I'm going to keep on moving.
Yeah.
I feel like a failure, but I'm going to keep going. But then there's some people that can't make that decision just that easily and quickly.
Yeah.
And it takes more work for them. So for those people, I say, hey, seek out someone that's an expert in this area. For me, I can rely on my faith in God. And now a lot of times that's enough to keep pushing me.
Yeah.
It's not always enough for everyone.
I guess a good analogy for that is if somebody wants to get physically fit, there's definitely people who can get out on their own and just go for the run or do their training.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've always been that way. But then there's plenty of people who I've coached, I've just said, hey, you don't have to figure this out on your own. You can just go and get a good trainer who's going to take you that distance. So I'm a huge believer, I guess, in seeking out the expertise and help that you need. And on that, here's a broad question. Where do you think people get stuck most? In this broad area of personal development, motivation, life, business, in your experience as an author, speaker, and pastor, where do you see people get stuck? What experiences, beliefs, what makes people get stuck?
I think a lot of times we get stuck when we get to the end of, what's the best way to say this? Our knowledge in an area. I'm normally not short for words, but I am now. When we get to the edge of where, you know, we all have experiences in life.
Yeah.
And those experiences can only take us so far. Yeah. That's why I've thrown myself into books and interviews with other people to see more, to get exposed to more.
Yeah.
But a lot of times we get stuck because our knowledge can only take us so far.
Yeah.
There has to come a time where we have to learn how to expand ourselves. That's why I say believe in something bigger than yourself and connect to others that are greater than you. Bible says iron sharpens iron. Yeah. I've realized that if I don't have the right connections with the right people, I'm always going to get stuck because my experiences can only take me so far.
That's
my knowledge can only get me so far. So in order to get unstuck, a lot of times you have to get with some people that have some views that are different, that have some knowledge base that's more broad than my own, or some experiences that can help me expand who I am and encourage me to go further.
And that's rich. And I often say in seminars to people, I go, look, for most of human history, nobody got to go to school. Like, you know, it was only really the start of the 20th century that high schools began to exist in the US because of changes in technology meant that they didn't need kids on farms as much. So, and I say in the seminars that because of the internet, you can get access to the best thinking, the best people for free, like podcasts, YouTube. There's so much great stuff out there, which, you know, I've become just so, like you've been saying, you've really got to position yourself to receive some of the great stuff that's out there. Now, I want to talk about a few of the things in the book that I really loved. I think my favorite, and I hope you remember this because I've done interviews on my own book like a year or so after I've written it, and people go, do you remember that story? And you're like, I think I do. The foreign objects story, I liked that one where you talked about, take us through that story. Tell us, you know, a little bit about what happened that day at school and the teaching point that you have off the back of that about foreign objects in our lives. So what happened?
Yeah, that's kind of hard to forget.
It would be.
So, yeah, when I was younger, for some reason, I thought I was going to be a magician.
Yeah.
So instead of paying attention in class one day, I decided to do a wonderful magic trick for my friend. Put a quarter in my hand. I said, hey, I'm going to make this quarter disappear. And all I was supposed to do was throw it into my mouth and boom, voila, it's gone. I guess I took it a step further and I accidentally swallowed the quarter. That was not a part of the plan at all.
Yeah.
But that's what happened. Swallowed the quarter, walked around. I didn't want to admit that I had swallowed the quarter. I did not want to give in to the fact that I had kind of failed that little magic trick. So just before lunch, I ended up calling my parents. They came, picked me up, rushed me to the hospital. We got to the first hospital. They kept examining me. You have a foreign object or a quarter stuck in your throat. You know, we're going to have to get it out. Okay, no problem. Well, the problem came in when they referred us to the next hospital, the children's hospital we were arrived to, said that they were going to have to do surgery. Surgery was not at all what my parents wanted to hear.
Yeah.
So my dad exercised his faith, laid his hands on me. He started to pray, and somehow that quarter moved. So they did not have to cut me open. They did, because they were I was a child. This was a really big deal. They were going to have to crack open my thoracic cavity, just boom, rip open my chest to get this quarter down because my esophagus was starting to swell.
Yeah.
You know, the doctor told us later, if you would have went to lunch and you would have eaten, you would have choked to death immediately. So I'm definitely grateful I didn't go to lunch, but I really didn't want to have surgery either. So when my dad prayed, it went down, and that helped me later on in life to realize we introduce things into our body sometimes that can potentially kill us. And if not kill us, definitely halt where we're going in life. And you know, those foreign objects can be things like drugs and alcohol, but they can also be self-doubt and fear.
Yeah.
You know, the tangible as well as the intangible. There's a lot of foreign objects that can get inside of us and keep us from getting to our goal. So that's what that chapter was about. The first chapter is actually my favorite, but that was one of my favorites.
I love some of the stories, and I really want everybody to grab a copy either of the physical book or the I'm a big fan of audiobooks these days. So we're going to point everybody to Audible at the end of this to make sure they get a copy. Tell us, what do you see as some of the big foreign objects? We've talked about drugs and alcohol. You've mentioned self-doubt and fear. What else do you see as some of the foreign objects, the beliefs, the what do people settle for in their mind? What sort of things do you see people cutting deals with that introduce into their lives something that either stops them or sends them backwards? What are some of the big things you notice with people?
You just mentioned belief. That to me is a big deal. There's so many of us that just fail to believe. We fail to believe that it's possible for us. We fail to believe that we are able. And I always tell people, if it's ever been done in life, that means you can do it.
I just listened to that.
And if it's never been done, be the first.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the way I look at it. We know at one point in time it was said that we couldn't do heart transplants.
Yeah.
It was impossible to transplant a heart. Then we did it. You know, it was impossible. Man can only run so fast.
Yeah.
And then people broke the record. Then they kept breaking the record. You know, there's things that we put inside of our heads, and then, you know, they become self-fulfilling prophecies. We just fulfill these things because this is as far as I can believe.
Yeah.
So that's as far as you'll go. So you get stuck, you know, then you get stagnant. Then you start getting worse and worse. And I just look at life and I say, if we don't remove these foreign objects, if we don't get rid of this self-doubt, if we don't get rid of these fears, if we don't get rid of these misbeliefs, you know, we'll always be stuck in that same little area where we've gotten comfortable. And I think comfort is one of those things too that can really hold us up in life.
Yeah.
When we get too comfortable.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about, that's rich, like, because I've experienced this so much. Like, I did a keynote in St. Louis last year for 10,000 people. And just before I walked on stage, my wife said to me, she goes, "Are you nervous?" And I said, and normally I used to be very nervous. And I said, "No." I said, "I'm not." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Well, I'm terrified for you." And she goes, "Why aren't you nervous?" And I said, "Darling," I said, "if God's stupid enough to put me up here in front of these people," I said, "it's his problem." But in terms of what you're saying, it was the decision to go, when you take that step onto the stage and you got everybody there, like, I'd worked and prepared, but listening to what you're saying here, it's that step out of comfort into the difficult thing. How do people do that? What's your advice? Is it small steps? What have you done in your own life? How do you move? What do you need to do just to move out of comfort? What sort of things do you think work? How do we get people to do it?
You know, you actually said something earlier I really want to address when you started out with talent and hard work. I saw an interview with Will Smith one time, great actor, of course, but he said the difference between me and a lot of people is that I'm willing to die on a treadmill.
That's right.
He said, you know, interviewers are like, "What do you mean by that?" And I look at that with talent and hard work. You can be the most talented person in the world, but if you don't have the work ethic, your talent won't always carry you to where you want to go. And I see that all the time with people here in Atlanta. But Will Smith said, "I'm willing to die on a treadmill." What that means is when I get on the treadmill, I'm either going to win. If I'm competing against someone else that's on a treadmill, I'm either going to beat them or I'm going to die. Because I'm not going to give up. You know, that's his competitive spirit. And I think a lot of times in life, that's where we have to put ourselves. We can't always depend on our talent. We can't always depend on our natural gifting. Sometimes it comes down to straight up old fashioned hard work.
Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes, it says, you know, success, and I knew I was going to mess it up as soon as I started. Success is sometimes disguised in overalls and looks like hard work.
Yeah.
You know, comfort, you know, that's when things are going easy. I can do this or I can do that. I'm good at this or I'm good at that. But when you decide that you want more, it requires harder work. It requires hard work. It requires smart work. It requires us to dig a little bit deeper, and that's when things get a little bit more uncomfortable. But what I've learned is the payoff is always better.
Yeah.
When I actually put something into a project, the feeling that I get from it is so much better than if I just throw it together.
Yeah.
You know, even if it goes well, you know, the payoff isn't the same to me. I don't feel as good about it. I'm not as proud of it if I just throw it together and people still like it. But when I put something into it, I'm attached to it. And when I'm attached to it and it does well, it makes me feel wonderful. And when I'm attached to it and it doesn't do so wonderful, I still feel good because I did my best.
Yeah, it's integrity. Yeah.
And I really, you know, I believe we just have to get to that point where we don't just throw things out there. We always go 100%.
Yeah.
We always give our best. And a lot of times, the best doesn't come in that comfortable place.
Yeah. And that's one of the chapters in your book. I was driving, I've listened to the book now a bunch of times, and I put it on the way back into the office today, and you have a chapter devoted to that idea of being the best. So the question I have is, listening to you now, there's always been, well, there's increasingly for me a link between hard work and clarity of purpose or clarity of outcome. Like, the clearer that you are on what matters in your life, what you want, what you want to have, do, or experience, that makes it possible to work. I mean, there's hard work in a salt mine, okay? There's hard work in a coal mine. But the kind of work we're talking about is often comes from being very clear about what it is that really matters. Now you're clear on that in your life. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for people who don't have that? They're listening to you and I, and they're going, "This is good. It's exciting. It's encouraging." But how do I find my clarity of purpose? How can people do that? How can they? I thought it was obvious, but it's really not. Like, it's, how do people find it?
I ask people all the time, what do you want?
Yeah.
Because you have to define a destination before you launch out.
Yeah.
You have to know where you're going before you can plan on how you're going to get there.
Yeah.
So I tell people, you know, being in the States, I'm over here in Georgia on the East Coast. And then there's California on the West Coast. And I say, there's 100 different ways to get from Georgia to California.
Yeah.
But if you don't pick a route, you'll end up going around in circles. Because it's so easy to get lost on the journey if you don't define a destination and then determine a route. You have to plan for where you're going. So the first thing we have to do is decide, where do we want to go? What do we want out of life? What are we trying to do? Are you trying to write a book? Are you trying to start a business? Once you decide that, you can start hammering out the smaller details. If you want to start a business, what kind of business do you want to start? Why do you want to start that kind of business? In Dogging the Dream, Succeed or Die Trying, another book of mine, I said that your why is all that you need to carry you over your obstacles.
Yeah.
A lot of times we don't know how we're going to get things done. We don't have a lot of those questions answered up front. But if you can determine why you want what you want, a lot of times it'll be enough to keep you going.
Yeah,
when you feel like, when you feel like throwing in the towel, your why will keep you going. So decide what you want out of life and then decide why you want that.
Now, that's so true. Why aren't people doing it?
Because it's difficult.
Yeah.
That's the easy answer. It's difficult. It's easy a lot of times to go clock in, then clock out and leave it all at work.
Yeah.
It's easy to go and allow someone else to make the decisions for you and say, hey, I want you to do this at this time, this at this time, and then you can go home and I'll send you a paycheck for it. A lot of times that's a little bit easier for some people. But what I've learned is when it gets to that point where that's really difficult, then you'll start looking at your other options. So I tell people all the time, if you're uncomfortable where you are, that might mean that you need to be somewhere else. You don't want to overstay. You're welcome. You don't want to stay in one place so long that you get miserable.
And you have another chapter on that. And I was just about mm-hmm. to, you talk about, you give that metaphor of the manna in the desert when the people of Israel are leaving Egypt, and it's where you talk about moving on from things and letting go of things that have previously been your life. Talk about that a little bit. What some people, like, I mean, I did a radio interview the other day. We talked about reference groups and, you know, the people you spend the most time with.
Mm-hmm.
What advice do you have for people about, like, doing an inventory of what they need to move on from? why do people stay in situations, jobs? Why is it hard for people to let go?
I tell people all the time, one of the most important things you have to do is constantly evaluate the circle of people that you're in.
Yeah.
The friends that you keep, the company you keep. What you were referring to is that chapter on the manna, you know, the children of Israel, God's chosen people. They were led through the desert, and every day he would drop manna, food from the sky for them to eat.
Yeah.
But then once they got to the promised land, the land that he had promised to give them, the land overflowing with milk and honey, the manna stopped falling. But it was because it was no longer necessary. They were in a different setting now to where they could go out and get the food for themselves. But if they would have kept going outside, just staring up at the sky, they would have starved to death.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of us get stuck. We'll get stuck in a friend group that at one time was good for us, but now is not. You know, when I was in school, I was a football player. So a lot of my friends were football players. Because as a football player, they helped me to become a better player because we practiced together and we talked to each other about plays and they told me how to run better routes and how to catch the ball better. And we built each other up because we were in the same place. But when I went to business, I couldn't rely on my football friends to help me grow as a business person.
Yeah.
I had to change my circle. I had to change because I wasn't eating the same way anymore. I wasn't being fed the same way anymore. Just like with the manna, I had to change because the circumstances changed. And I look at businesses today, a lot of businesses, well, Toys R Us, we see all these different huge companies going under now and closing stores. But if you don't keep up with the times, that's what happens. You get stuck in what you were doing a decade ago, and it's no longer good enough for what's happening now.
That's true.
So we have to be able to adjust and evaluate ourselves constantly and evaluate those that we spend time with. Because as we change, the people around us have to change.
So this work, this kind of, I mean, we keep coming back to this, that you've actually got to think your way through this. And I do a huge amount of journaling, so I pretty much every day I'm writing about, you know, goals and systems and ideas. And so let's just say someone's listening to this and they're like, okay, I want to make some changes. How do they do this work? How would you say, like, if somebody said to you, hey, Ron, I like what you're saying. I want to put this into practice. Give me a couple of steps. Give me a couple of ideas or what things I can do to begin to define my purpose or turn my life around. What are some of the key steps or ideas you'd give people to start a process of change?
Well, for one, I applaud the people that are listening to this podcast because that's a part of it.
Yeah.
Expanding yourself. That's what I always tell people. Expand yourself. Read more. You know, if you're reading, you know, one book a week, which is phenomenal because most people don't do that.
Yeah.
But if you're reading one a week, start reading two. And don't just read the same stuff all the time. Read something different.
Yeah.
Be careful what goes inside of you, what you put inside your temple. You know, that affects your mind. So be careful what you're watching. What shows are you watching on TV? What types of things are you allowing to get inside of you? To me, this is the first thing that we have to change, what we're putting inside.
So is that like an inventory? Like you'd say to people, hey,
Absolutely. Get
out a pen and paper, make an inventory of the inputs in your life, the people, the places you're hanging out, the inputs, the social media, the YouTube stuff you're on. Is that a good first step, an inventory?
I believe that's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Absolutely great way. Take inventory of your life. I believe I mentioned in the book, you know, take a look at the people that are around you. Take a look at where they are or where they're going. You know, we become the sum total of those people that we're around. So you have to look at the people that you're around. Look what they're putting inside of you. Are they encouraging you? You know, are they motivating you? Are they directing you towards your goals? Or are they pulling you towards theirs? And if they're pulling you towards theirs, is that the place you want to go?
Yeah.
So you have to be aware of the people that are around you, the programs that we're watching, the different things that we're allowing inside of our mind.
Yeah.
So I'll tell people, you know, watch interviews, listen to podcasts. You have YouTube. You know, at one point in time, you had to spend thousands of dollars to
go on
with Tony Robbins or Les Brown or Zig Ziglar or some of those guys.
Yeah.
But now you can turn on YouTube and get free access to all the motivation and encouragement you need, to
100%.
The intelligence you need, You know, there's so many avenues now. Like you said, you don't even have to read a book. You can listen to a book.
Yeah.
You can go to Audible. You can listen while you're driving. You can listen while you're working out. All types of things. It was actually one of my readers that told me I need to get on Audible.
Yeah.
I just got on Audible last week.
Yeah.
Because someone that had purchased a book said, hey, I love this book, but I'd love to be able to listen to it while I work out.
So is it that recent that you've put it on there?
Absolutely.
Oh, man, that's crazy. That is crazy. That's a God thing, right? Because we're sitting here having this discussion across the world, and I literally just got on my bike on Monday morning and just jumped on Audible, and you just came up. That's crazy.
Yep, I think it hit. I think I just got the alert that it had gone live, and I'm pretty sure the first person.
Woohoo! That's awesome. But I just listened to it, and I was just, let's finish up on this idea. So you talked about expanding yourself, the inputs. Mm-hmm. We've talked about inventory. Mm-hmm. Let's talk, what else? What else would you say to people are some of the key ingredients to really shift their life?
Hang around people that are smarter than you.
Yeah.
I don't ever like to be the smartest person in the room because that means that's as far as I'm going to go.
Yeah.
I love the fact that I have some wonderful people around me. Some of those friends that I have now are friends that I've had for a long time. So when I said earlier, as you change, the people around you have to change. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always mean that the people have to change. Like you have to get new people. No, sometimes the people around you will change with you.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful thing. If your friends can grow with you, then you don't have to replace them. So I'm grateful that I have some people around me that keep pushing me. We're not all in the same industry, but they own their industries. So they help me learn new things about myself by seeing what they're doing. You know, one of my buddies, we actually just went and had dinner not too long ago. He's kind of being mentored by Gary Vaynerchuk now.
Wow, Gary V, there you go.
For those that don't know Gary V, you know, he's very powerful and motivational.
He is.
Rich man, you know.
There he is, 100%.
Absolutely. I love this guy. And I'm sitting with a friend. I was actually on Instagram one day and Gary V commented on one of his videos. That's amazing. He was like, yeah, man, we talk, you know, at least once a week we talk. He's a rapper actually out of Atlanta, you know.
Well,
you
do a lot of music. Yeah.
But he said someone actually put one of his songs in Gary's playlist. Like
Gary's video. Oh, the Spotify, the Monday to Monday list, yeah.
Yes. So all of a sudden, my friend jumped to like 70,000 subscribers on Spotify. You know, he releases a song and automatically he's got tens of thousands of listens. And,
so good.
And we had to sit down and kind of figure out, you know, how'd you get there? And he said, it was just work, man. And I said, that's the key. A lot of times, I think Mark Cuban said, you know, it only takes 10 years to become an overnight success.
Success, yeah.
Nobody sees all that work you put in behind the scenes. So I tell people, well, you got to keep working. That's one of the keys. You have to keep working.
It's so true. I'm just listening to you, like, you talk about the inputs. Like, you know, I find your book and I listen to it on the bike. I'm listening to your book in the car. I came in the office today and I had to do some admin and I just go straight to YouTube. I just type in motivational instrumental music. And while I'm working, I've just got the good vibes coming out. Podcasts, books, just, you know, I'm 44 years of age. I've done, you know, live events for over 400,000 people, but I am still every day just taking this stuff in and trying to grow. I want to ask you two final questions. The first one I want to ask you is, take us to the DNA, the essence of your work, this book. What is it that you are really trying to say to the world? If we go to the heart of your message, what is it? What do you want people to know?
With You're Too Close to Give Up Now, I think that first and last chapter sums it all up. That first chapter tells this story of the two mice from a wonderful movie I liked. But it's two mice fell into a vat of cream. One gave up and died. The other one kept swimming until he turned the cream into butter and he was able to walk out. For me, You're Too Close to Give Up Now is an illustration of that. You're going to be one of those two mice. you're either going to be the one that gives up and never gets to see your dream come to fruition, or you're going to be the other monster that continues to fight until somehow you turn even the worst situation into what you want it to be.
Yeah.
And then you're too close to give up now. And by asking, how bad do you want it?
Yeah.
You know, from motivational speaker, Eric Thomas, you know, and he tells this story of the guru and the young man that's saying, hey, I want to be great like you. And he says, well, come out into the water. And he says, well, okay. Gets waist deep, come a little bit further. Gets chest deep, come a little bit further. Water's over his head. And he pulls him up and says, when you couldn't breathe, what did you want? He said, I just wanted to live. I just wanted to breathe, you know? And he said, well, when you want to succeed as bad as you want to breathe, that's yeah. when you'll succeed.
It's desire.
And that's, tell people, you have to want it.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing to fight for it.
And where do they, I mean, we mentioned this before, but I'm still, I know there'll be people listening who are inspired by what you're saying, but they're like, I don't know what I want. They're afraid to start, or they're not clear. How do they cross that line? You're clear. I'm clear. You know, how do they do that? How do people get in touch with that deep desire? How do they get there?
Well, what I was doing when I started looking for, I was in a job at one point that I absolutely hated, but yeah. I needed it, you know, during that crisis, you know, I needed something to keep the bills paid, to keep eating. So I got a job and I did not like the job. So I had to find a way out. So I started searching for some type of business that I could start. What I learned in that process was that a lot of businesses start in one place and end up somewhere completely different. But you'll never end up anywhere if you don't get started.
Yeah.
So to those people that aren't sure what they want to do, I always give people the same advice. You know, what stays on your mind? What is that thing that you can't really shake? Yeah, when you go somewhere, you know, it might even be customer service. You go to a restaurant and you look at someone and say, oh, come on. All they had to do was this and this and I would have yeah. been happy. You know, maybe that's your area of expertise. Maybe that's where you need to start developing yourself. What is the thing that really bugs you? What really gets under your skin, you know? Yeah. What is that thing that you're kind of passionate about? Or what is the thing that you're just naturally good at? Some people yeah. are just naturally good at certain things. That might be the thing you need to pursue.
Yeah.
But when you get started, at least you're taking steps and you'll end up somewhere.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just have to figure it out along the journey.
Yeah, that's true. I like that is gold, what you just said there, the question, what stays on your mind? I like that. Sometimes they call that divine discontent, like mm-hmm. there's something that just bugs you and you're like, you know, it's like God's always trying to get our attention, right? He's always sort of giving us these little helps going this way, you know? I want to ask you a final question, which was... if you could imagine standing in front of a room of people and you've got like one sentence, they bring you up on stage and they say, we've got author Ron Walker here. He's got one sentence that he wants to say to you that captures his heart for you. What do you think you'd say to people?
You're too close to give up now.
Amen. I love it. I love it.
Too close to give up now.
Tell us where we can find you. I'm going to put a ton of links here to Audible, to your book, to your website. Where else can people find you on the internet?
Just about everywhere at Author Ron Walker. So whether it's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all these different social media platforms, everywhere at Author Ron Walker. Also at authorronwalker.com. Like you said, on Amazon, Kindle, everywhere books are sold, everywhere CDs are sold. There's something that I've done there.
That is so good. Well, I'll put some links up too. I want to thank you on behalf of everybody that's heard this for staying up late in Atlanta, Georgia. It's afternoon here, but you've made time for us. I want to thank you for your wisdom. I want to thank you for bringing your light into the world. There's plenty of people queuing up to bring darkness, but it's just great to have some time with somebody bringing light. So thank you for what you've done. Thank you for your choices and your responses to adversity, and we just want to bless what you're doing and hope you're going to keep writing for us.
Thank you so much, and I want the same from you, because I've taken the time to look through some of your stuff, and I'm going to have to look through more, because what I did see really did touch me.
Fantastic. Author Ron Walker, thank you so much for your time. Have a great evening.
You too, sir. Thank you.
Well, there you go. How good was that? There was some gold in there. I hope you get a chance to maybe listen to this again, because there's some really rich practical wisdom, practical advice right throughout that podcast. Do me a favor, hit subscribe if you're hearing this on SoundCloud. Hit subscribe if you're hearing this on iTunes. I want you to go and check out the links. I want you to get yourself a copy of Ron's book, his audio book. Get in touch with his social feeds. Reach out to him. Let him know what you thought. But for now, thanks for the privilege of your time. I hope it's been a real blessing to you. All we need is a few good ideas now and then to nudge us forward. But I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. I'm Jonathan Doyle. I'm going to have some more great content for you very soon.